Hello, everyone. I am NewsNate here with a special guest, Dr. Mestaz, coming from CMC, and I'll allow him to introduce himself. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. So, yes, my name's Dr. James Mestaz. I'm originally from California. Spent some time throughout the United States doing my schooling. Went to UCLA for undergrad, and then University of Miami for my master's degree, and then Chicago, University of Illinois, Chicago for my PhD, and spent last year at the University of Iowa teaching for 1 year. So
Nice.
Yeah, back in California. Very happy to be back.
Awesome. Yeah, glad to hear it.
Yeah.
And so the first question I have for you here is, how long have you been teaching and what has inspired you to go into the academic field that you are in currently?
Absolutely. So overall, I've been teaching for several years. As a teaching assistant, essentially. So as some people know, as a graduate student in some of these larger universities, they have teaching assistants that are in charge of their own discussion sections. So I was always in charge of my own discussion section, do the grading, lead whole classes themselves. It's basically almost the same thing as being a professor, but you're not the actual professor in charge there. So I had several years experience doing that in both Miami and at University of Illinois, Chicago. And then I got my first real gig last year at University of Iowa as a professor. And it was a learning experience, to say the least. It was a 3-3 class load, so three classes per semester. It was very challenging, but I learned a lot from it. And I'm going to use what I learned now from last year to become a better professor this year.
Awesome. Nice. Yeah, and definitely. Were you working there with a trimester system?
Or? Yeah, there was. Okay. It was a semester system there as well. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. So it was good. It was very good. But yeah, basically my inspiration for teaching what I do, I mean, I came out of UCLA and my first year, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to be a businessman, something like that, make money. And then, I just figured out that wasn't what I wanted to do. And my first history class, I really, really loved the material. The first thing I read inspired me. It was basically an excerpt from a conquistador, one of the conquistadors that came to conquer Mexico. And his description of the city of what is now Mexico City, Tenochtitlan, basically... the way he described it was so beautiful that it was so amazing that the way the Aztecs created their city was that he thought that he was dreaming. And to me, this really filled me with a sense of pride, knowing that I come from this proud Mexican, Latino heritage, and my indigenous roots, because I have indigenous roots as well, Yaqui on one side and Tarahumara on the other side. So knowing these indigenous roots and just the Latino roots, really filled me with a sense of pride I really never had. And I really wanted to share that with other people. It really inspired me. And from then on, it led me to my career path today, basically. And I really want to share my inspiration and my passion for history and for these indigenous and Latin American roots with other students. And in doing so, I believe that I'm actually making a positive change in society, which is really what I want to do.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so you're looking at history and specifically for indigenous peoples in Latin America. Is that correct?
That's my focus. Specifically, my dissertation was of the Mayo people of Sinaloa, which is northwestern Mexico, and their changing interaction with a river system. So basically, my work interacts with both environmental history and ethnohistory. So that's really what I'm working with, both of those things. But I really focus on a lot of other things that I teach. This semester, I'll be teaching Latinx immigration, which some people might not know is basically Latino immigration. But that's just the new way to say it because it takes off out the gender emphasis.
Right.
So Latinx immigration, that'll be this semester. And next semester, I'll be teaching the Mexican Revolution.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So I'm looking forward to both classes. Really trying to fill actually the Latinx immigration class, it went on the books very late. So I think a lot of students don't know about it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if any students are listening right now, if you're looking for a really good class, you know, I definitely urge you to try to take it. It's History 112 for CMC. We meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and it's going to be a really good class. We have a lot of guest speakers coming in.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so it'll not just be, you know, about the history of Latinx immigration, but what is going on now? How can you possibly even become involved in shaping the way that this whole debate is carried out today, even?
Right.
We're also going to plan on taking a field trip. I'm planning that at this moment as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
And it counts towards Chicano studies and history?
I believe it is a general ed course, actually.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so it's actually a general ed course. I know there's going to be a lot of first-year students there, but mm-hmm. that's the beautiful thing about it is that, you know, it does take a historical perspective, but I come from a lot of different, so not just history, so sociology,
mm-hmm.
Some anthropology, political science. There's a lot of different schools of thought thrown in there.
Gotcha. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't have to be an historian.
Right.
But you will learn, you know, the historical sort of take on it.
Right. It's a good little in-depth course for something that
right.
people can probably pursue later on as well.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, I've had students take my courses and then later come to me and say, hey, I actually changed my major to history because of your course. To me, that is... no bigger of a compliment than that.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
And just a more general question, what brought you to the Claremont Colleges?
Well, basically, I applied for the job. I got the job. I've really been wanting to come back to California. You know, I'm born and raised here in California. I knew Claremont was and always has been one of the top schools in the nation. And so... Coming to Claremont was really a dream of mine. To be able to teach at a, you know, small liberal arts school that really focuses on the students and takes the approach that they do and really cares about shaping the minds of these students, not just teaching them. For me, it's not just about teaching history, but also, you know, helping to teach these students how to think. So really what you learn in my classes will really carry over to your everyday life, really. It'll prepare you for life in general.
Nice.
Yeah.
And did you know about all the Claremont colleges in general when you first applied, or were you
right.
first exposed to Claremont McKenna?
Right. So I knew about all the Claremont colleges. I knew about Pomona. I knew about Harvey Mudd. But all of them. Scrapes. All of them. And I knew that. I knew about the Claremont Consortium. The brilliant thing that they really do here is really combining, you know, all these students, you know, together, allowing them to take my course. I think it's something I'm really looking forward to,
because mm-hmm.
I know that every college is very prestigious, but they all sort of have their own little, you know, take on things, their own sort of direction,
right.
which is slightly different,
mm-hmm.
Which is really amazing to me. You know, to have students that sort of come from different perspectives, I think is really going to be amazing to have that in one course. I think it's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's very unique to here, I would
yes,
say.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
And how, and this can go from all your teaching experience in general, right. how has your experience as a Latino history professor been both in the classroom and with mm-hmm. colleagues?
It's been great. People are really supportive overall. It's funny, there's been times, you know, a lot of students... You know, see me up there, and especially when I was starting as a graduate student, you know, like I would come up and they would be like, "Oh, where's the you know teacher at?" And I, well, that's me. And they're like, "Oh, okay." Like they didn't realize that because you know I would dress, you know, just, you know, nice shirt and jeans, whatever.
Right.
Most
right.
of the time, I look like a student, basically. I mean, some people say I look young, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess you could guess. You could say that yourself. But. Yeah, nowadays, you know, I tend to wear a suit to set me apart as a professor. But yeah, no, it's been overall very, as I said, you know, it's a challenging profession, but it's been really, really rewarding. Being a student of color, it definitely provides, actually has its own challenges, mm-hmm. as any student of color will tell you, especially one from a mostly impoverished background. I have piled up loads of student debt which I won't get into now, but, you know, which is, you know, even today is a challenge. And just, you know, just going through my own little battles, you know, throughout the college experience was, you know, not easy. But I got through it, made me a stronger person. And because of that, is really the way that I've become even more committed to helping students of color. Knowing the challenges that I went through and seeing those same challenges that they're going through the same thing, and knowing that, look, they need a little push sometimes, they need some inspiration, and I'm there to help them with that. And it's not just students of color either, but all students really go through challenges, and everybody's going through their own little things. But I'm there for all students. Students of color, students from all backgrounds really can, I think, take from my classes and from my personal experience as well. I mean, that is, as a professor, you know, you feel like you're a therapist as well sometimes. Students come in, they have, you know, some problems they're going through, and something I really enjoy that students are able to confide in me as well. And, you know, being able to help them on an everyday basis is really rewarding.
And I would imagine that's more common, especially in classes where you do tend to have a smaller student to professor ratio. And is that Definitely. Something that you've been used to, or is this something new coming into Claremont Colleges?
Right. So luckily, the schools I've been in had sort of smaller student to professor ratio. Some of the schools, like University of Illinois Chicago, had really huge classes, you know, like 200 students or something, you know, some of the lecture classes. But they would split those into smaller discussion sections. So I usually didn't have... You had maybe almost 25, you know, students or so per class, which was fine. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think I've ever taught over like 25 students. And then at University of Iowa, I was lucky enough to have, you know, mostly smaller classes as well. I think the most I had was maybe 20 students. So yeah, it's something I'm definitely familiar with, and I think it's makes it a lot easier to really focus on the students and their needs. I really not just, as I said, not just teaching, you know, students how to think and about history, but also really focus on their writing. Because writing is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not. It is a practice that you really have to hone for years and really, really try your best at. It's something I'm still working on. It's, you never really perfect it, I don't think. And it's something that, as I learn more, I really want to share this with the students as well.
Nice. Yeah. And just speaking of learning in general, I noticed that you've been invited to several conferences and lectures.
Right.
And I was wondering how those may have affected how you've taught your own courses, or specifically brought more depth to any of your lectures or courses that you teach yourself.
Right. So, yeah, no, definitely... first of all, when you go to a conference, when you present at a conference, you learn a lot about your own work, because you have a lot of feedback given to you by colleagues. Some of them are, you know, people. Some of these professors, I've read their books. They're like heroes of mine. I'm sort of like this, you know, history nerd that looks at these professors. Oh my God, this guy wrote this book. I'm like, you know, I'm like being a superstar or something, you know. And it's, you know, it's a professor, you know, but it's some, you know, brilliant book, and you know, I get to read their work, and there they are in the audience listening to my talk, and you know, it's a little nerve wracking. But you know, after you present, and then they start to tell you about, oh, this is, I like your work, and this is what I would do, you know, differently, and you get to see things from a different perspective that you never thought about before. So it really helps you with your writing. It really helps you with your teaching as well. And then you get to see other people, other colleagues, and you get to think about your work and history and Latin America in general from a different perspective. And you get to see you know, what's coming out, what are going to be the new books that are coming out, the new perspectives that people, you know, take. And it really helps you with your work a lot. And it's really been a huge benefit to me in the way that I teach, really.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good to hear that it's not just benefiting people attending the conference, but people who are participating in it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And would you say that you've been able to branch out at these conferences, or just in the different places that you've taught, with people coming from different areas of Latin America?
Definitely.
And how have you intersected with your research?
Right. So it's funny, like one of the brilliant things about my job and my career is the connections you make. You know, people you meet, these conferences, you run into them again. I mean, we're, you know, it's, it seems like it, like it's a, like it's, you know, because there's a lot of professors out there, but it's actually a small world. And you run into them all the time, and you know, you go and have a beer with them. You know, and you hang out, and you talk about your work, and you talk about your personal life. And then you run into them again. You say, you know, I'm in Mexico doing research, and I'm at an archive, and then there's my buddy. You know, it's like, right. Hey, what's up? You know, how you been? You know, like, good to see you. You know, and you know, you catch up again. You know, you go grab dinner. You know, you talk about what you're doing, and you bounce ideas off of each other all the time. And then, you know, we look at each other's work. You know, I mean, at this point, I mean, it's hard sometimes to you know, when working on an article or something like that. You know, it's good to get another pair of eyes on it sometimes, you know, and it's hard sometimes to get that. But knowing that I do have colleagues that I trust that are, you know, brilliant writers as well, and that are willing to help me out. It's just unbelievable that they can, you know, take their time to do that. And I love to do that as well for them.
Right. Because,
yeah.
Just
yeah.
Forming those relationships.
Right.
In
right.
General.
Yeah. Forming those relationships is just, you know, you really can't beat it with, you know, it's a great, great experience. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I really loved it.
And do you feel like one day you're going to fall into the role that you looked up to before? And how does that make
definitely.
You feel?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. No, it's funny. Even now, like I've, you know, when I go to when I've gone to conferences, you know, I've seen professors like, oh my God, like I've, you know, that's this person. I love their work and, you know, get to meet them and stuff and, you know, hang out and, you know, talk to them. And I've had similar experiences lately. You know, I've had people come up to me, oh, I read your dissertation. Like, it's amazing. Like, you know, like, oh my God, really? Somebody read it? Like, like it's not even a book yet. Okay, great. You know, because I know it's out there. You know, it's public information, you know. Mm-hmm. And for somebody to tell me that, they're like, oh yeah, it's really inspired me. It's like, whoa, wow. Like, it's only been done like less than a year ago. And,
right.
You know, I'm already inspiring people. It's pretty amazing. So I'm getting there now. Mm-hmm. But once I finish this article I'm working on now, and once I turn this dissertation into a book, you know, basically that's how it works. Yeah, we take our dissertations. Most professors do this. Take a dissertation, turn it into a book. Right now, like my dissertation was like 470 pages, essentially.
Oh, wow.
And so right now I'm working on turning that big monster into about 180 pages, roughly.
Right.
Which is no easy task.
Oh, I imagine.
No. It's not easy at all.
It's the page limits I deal with now are not nearly as extensive.
Yeah. Right. Well, it's funny when I have my students complain, you know, oh, this 15-page paper. You know, oh my God, I don't know if I could write 15 pages. Right, I'm like, well,
yeah.
If I can write 470 pages, I think you can write 15.
Exactly.
And I don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that what, you know, that they're, I know they have other classes. I know, you know, it's a serious gripe. 15 pages is not easy. But, you know, they have to put things in perspective as well. You know, I wish I could only write 15 pages, like sometimes, you know.
Right.
But, yeah. No, but I get where they're coming from. I was an undergrad myself. I remember it wasn't easy either. But they learn a lot from writing, I think. I think they learn a lot about themselves, and I want them to know that, you know, they could really accomplish anything when they put their minds to it.
Nice. And looking a bit more at learning and just writing in general, are there any resources here that you are excited to use, or just anything in general that you're excited to see at the Claremont Colleges?
Right. Well, the library here is actually really amazing. It's funny because before I got interviewed, I learned that there is an archive from this general from the state of Sonora, which is close to Sinaloa, who actually worked with the Mayo people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he was a mayor of the state of, governor, state of Sonora.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also a revolutionary leader. He led a lot of these Mayo soldiers and brought them into the state government, basically, and helped to mobilize them. So I learned that there is an archive that his son actually donated to the library.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So part of the special collections there.
And how old is this?
The archive is from, like, you know, I mean, it originally starts in like 1905 or something, probably.
Okay.
You know, probably ends in like 1920s, I think. About 1920s. And so, yeah, so it's a lot of his papers. And as far as I know, nobody's ever used these papers.
Oh, really?
To write anything. Yeah, there's been some articles and stuff written on him, you know, but nothing, I don't believe that anybody's really used this archive before. And it's been there, I think, since the 70s, I believe.
Oh, wow.
And I've never run across anybody using this archive before. And so that's one of the things I'm really, really excited about. Yeah, because, I mean, I've read about this guy several times and, you know, and I'm being able to work with these special, you know, collections.
Right, right.
Be pretty incredible.
Yeah, definitely seems like you found a little gold mine there.
Yeah, no, definitely. And also there's another special collections here about the sanctuary movement of Central America in the 1970s, 1980s that I'm actually going to have for my Latinx immigration class. I'm going to bring them into, I believe it's called the Darlene Nagorski Papers.
Okay.
They're there in the library as well in special collections. And I'm going to bring my students into the library and show them, hey, this is how we work with archives. Essentially, you know, and part of the course requirements is a final paper, which we would use primary documents. And some students get a little too intimidated when they hear primary documents. I want them to know, hey, this is nothing to be afraid of. This is something to be excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Going through documents like this and finding something new and, you know, writing something that nobody's ever written about before. Using these documents that nobody's probably never used to write in the same way that you are about to. To me, there's nothing more exciting. But I am a big history nerd. I'm sure some students will get excited about it. At least I'm hopeful that they will.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It sounds like a great selling point just for the course in general because you're getting students to kind of learn this new ability and have a new experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think they will get excited about it.
Nice. And looking over some of the organizations that you've been a part of and how you spent some of your time, I've noticed that you've worked with different nonprofits across the country. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if there are any specific reasons for why, and are there any that really stood out to you?
So there's been several of these nonprofits that I've worked with here in LA, here, you know, in Chicago. Just finished working, you know, for, you know, League of United Latin American Citizens in Iowa, who do really great work. Basically, to me, a lot of my work is all about bringing the community together with students. I'm all about trying to mobilize students into doing kind of what I'm doing, into making a positive change in society, into doing something positive. If the best way to do that is by joining some of these nonprofit grassroots organizations, I think that is a great approach that they can take. So that's one of the things, for instance, that for this class that I'm teaching in the fall, this Latinx immigration class is bringing several guest speakers from some of these grassroots organizations that work with these Latinx immigration groups and try to help these people. So that's really what I'm trying to do, is to bring these grassroots organizations together with students and show students, hey, you can make a difference. There are ways to go about, if you see something you don't like in society, you can go about and help change these things. You know, I mean, it's one thing to talk about these things amongst yourselves and learning. That's what the college experience is really about. But I want students to also sort of get outside this bubble, right? To get outside in the streets. And one of the things that helped me change my life was by working with some of these grassroots organizations and seeing that I can make a difference outside of academia. Because academia is one thing. It's one thing to write an article, you know, but when you write an article, like, let's face it, you know, maybe you have like 50 people looking at this article and think it's brilliant, right? But when you work it, when you're working on these grassroots organizations, you're working with thousands of people. Right, you're making a difference in the lives of everyday people that are not within academia, and to me, bringing those two things together is what really life's about.
Right, and it's just bringing in the active part of the activism in many ways.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes. And there's many different ways. You know, you don't have to be a complete radical necessarily if that's your thing. Hey, great. I've tended to be on. A little bit more on that side myself, but not all students are going to be, you know, as radical, as progressive. But, you know, there are several different ways that you can make a difference in society.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And looking a little bit more at the organizations around here, are there any on campus that have really stood out to you or that you know about, or are there any that you're looking to be involved with?
Right. So there's some of these resource centers that I'm working with. There's a lot of Chicano Latino, Chicanx, I should say, Latinx organizations here on campus that I'm really excited to work with. I'm actually going to be reaching out to them in the next, because I know summer, it's, kind of the downtime. But now that people are kind of coming back to school, I'm going to be actually reaching out to them in the next few weeks. Hopefully that, we can, come together and, plan some things for this next school year together, and bring them to my classes, and get students involved more in these things. I know they're there. I think students are active here on campus, and I'm really looking forward to seeing some of the things that students are interested in, because it's different. I mean, mm-hmm. There's a lot of commonalities across campuses on some of the things that you want to change in society and change on campus. But I'm really interested to see what are some of the things on these particular campuses that students are really interested in. How can I, as a faculty member, help them in their struggles today?
Right. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
It sounds like you have a plate full already of what you want to do for this year.
There's a lot. There's a lot there, but I'm tireless. I'm a tireless person. When there's something I'm passionate about, I do not hold back, basically. I'm going to keep struggling, and I want students to know that, hey, I'm here for you. I'm here to be next to you, by your side, as we, try to make a positive difference.
Nice. And are there any questions that you might have for any students? There's something that you're still maybe trying to form a more broader perspective of, either of Claremont McKenna in general, mm-hmm. or all of them?
Right. I mean, basically that's kind of the main thing I'm looking at. What are some of the things that you would change, here in on these campuses?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that concern you? What is it that, the faculty can do? What is it that administration can do? I can, help work with administration as well, help with the students as well. To see what, things are never perfect in any campus,
Right.
And I think that's what we're all here to try to do, is to try to change things on campus and make things more accessible to everybody, basically, mm-hmm. right? Make it a better place for everybody to live.
And going back to just something I want to touch on is that you have experience being in this field across different parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And do you feel like there are different perceptions of what your field actually focuses on and the gravity of it necessarily?
There is a difference. There definitely is. In Miami was a bit different than California. Miami, as some people might know, is pretty conservative. A lot of the Miami Cubans specifically tend to have a very conservative outlook on politics and things in general. And I went to Cuba in 2000, and I found that I could not, for instance, tell Cubans from Miami that I even went to Cuba, because they would get upset because of the fact that, they wanted to boycott everything and everything against Fidel Castro, and everything, that about the Cuban regime was horrible to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I really found it harder to carry out dialogue about Latin America in general, because there was a very strong opinion in one sense. To me, I'm a historian. I'm an academic. I like to complicate things,
right,
and show that there are gray areas. Things are not all black and white. But you even show that you're even a little bit, a little bit more left of center,
mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't have it out there a lot of times. Some were a little more, perceptive to it, but not all of them. So it was a little bit difficult at times speaking politics out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I got through it, and then got to live in Chicago, which was, definitely all about grassroots organization and really. Amazing people out there, really great grassroots organizations and stuff. And yeah, it's a little bit easier there. Met some really, really great people. And now I'm in California, which is, again, you have every different aspect here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different things coming together. And it's going to be interesting. I love to talk politics. I love to talk current events. And again, I'm I'm all about complicating things and showing that there are gray areas and that not everything is, you know, good or bad, yes or no. You know, there's a lot of complications with things. You know, we need to bring these things up, and that's what I'm about in everyday life, but it's also what I'm about in my classroom as well. You know, we need to discuss these things as being not so black and white, obviously.
And do you feel like in California, since we are so close to the Mexican-American border,
right,
that you find a different kind of passion for it or yep. specific connection that people have to it, given that Midwest and Miami might not have that same proximity?
Right, right. So yeah, definitely, definitely. So I for instance, I taught this Latinx immigration course in Iowa last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great course. Really, really great discussion. Students were awesome. But I've luckily been able to tweak it a little bit since I've come to California. you know, just using some of the resources we have here,
right?
And being able to bring in these grassroots, you know, speakers. Being able to use some of the archives here, these local archives. It's just been amazing. I mean, I'm really excited about this class. I just hope more students will enroll. It works a little better when it's a little bit bigger class. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. And yeah, it is a little bit different. It is, people are definitely, you know, very close. You know, as you said, we're very close to the border. People have different experiences here. People have very rich experiences here, I think, mm-hmm. was one of the important things. You know, some people, you know, have not been born here. Some people themselves are undocumented, some of these students. So I just want them to know as well, look, this is a safe space. When they come to my class, they can talk about their experiences. They can talk about their parents' experiences, friends. And it's a safe space. It's somewhere that, look, this, whatever we say in the classroom stays there. I'm not going to talk about it to anyone else. You know, there should be no fear of speaking about their experiences at all.
Awesome. And not to, of course, allude that maybe everyone who attends the colleges is from this area.
Right.
But just in general, as you were mentioning, there are lots of organizations that have been involved with these causes around here. Because even just colleges in general, you have people attending from different states, from different backgrounds, different countries.
Right.
I had a similar experience when I was with a suite mate who was taking Spanish and asked me, I'm from San Diego originally, and he asked me if how much a peso on average would transfer into cents. And he told me, he was asking me if he was making sure. And to me, that was a moment where I was personally stunned. I was like, how could you not know that? And then I remembered, He's from Tennessee.
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a thing, is that
mm-hmm.
because the students are so diverse, right? These different perspectives, I think, add to the rich exchange, right? We learn from each other, right? Mm-hmm. No opinion is wrong necessarily. Of course, if you start to present alternative facts per se, then, you know, then it's, yeah, maybe that could be wrong. But your point of view, as long as it's an informed point of view, it's valid, right? And it's necessary, right, to learn from each other. So my classes are not just about me standing up there and, you know, telling everybody how it is, right, or what happened, right? It's about us discussing, right, what has happened, how can we learn from it, what can we learn about the past that affects us today, right, and how can we help shape this, the future, basically, right, together.
And just questioning those assumptions that sometimes people have about history.
Absolutely, absolutely, right, right. And as students, as you know, of all these, you know, amazing colleges here, the students here are the leaders of tomorrow, basically. Let's face it. I mean, there's some really amazing students here. So they need to know that, hey, their opinion not only counts, but their opinion will shape the future of our society. Not just this state, but I imagine they'll move all over the United States and the world and really do some amazing things. And for them to be informed and be able to think as well will help them change the world, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Awesome. And for last question here, really, is more of a requirement I think I would put myself for anyone that I interview at the station is, mm-hmm. what kind of music are you interested in?
I'm in at everything, basically. I grew up, I'm gonna be honest with you, I grew up with hip hop. That's kind of what I've always been into. It's funny though, because I mean, I say I grew up in hip hop, but that wasn't until about high school. Funny enough though, my brother and sister were both big heavy metal fans.
Okay.
So I grew up with some Metallica, with some Ozzy Osbourne, you know, and that's how I grew up. I actually had very long hair till about ninth grade. Yeah, I was a headbanger myself for quite a few years when I was growing up. And then I got into high school and I really started to listen to hip hop a lot, especially some of this underground hip hop. And I still love hip hop, you know, especially this more underground stuff, not so much mainstream. As we know, there's a very big difference between hip hop and rap. I prefer hip hop over rap myself.
Mm-hmm.
There's some decent rap out there too, but you know, I prefer the sort of this underground, little more progressive, political hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
But I like all music really in general. Not so much in the country as much, as everything else, but, I've had the experience luckily of living in a lot of different places. I lived in Miami, you know, very great salsa music. I learned about bachata out there, merengue, lived in Chicago, who has a very good blues music scene, but also, you know, cumbias, are huge out there, you know, and now, you know, back in LA, you know, I mean, there's a huge scene for all kinds of, you know, underground, you know, rock music and alternative music. And to me, live music is just the best thing in the world. So really any music, as long as you're talented, you know, I really love it. So, yeah, pretty much everything, basically, I guess, is the answer to that.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us. And once again, that was Professor Mestaz, a new professor here at Claremont McKenna College. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Looking forward to seeing all the students soon.